Hi, this is Mac of Mac's List. Find Your Dream Job is presented by Mac's List, an online community where you can find free resources for your job search, plus online courses and books that help you advance your career. My latest book is called Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. It's a reference guide for your career that covers all aspects of the job search, including expert advice in every chapter. You can get the first chapter for free by visiting maxlist.org/anywhere. This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm Mac Pritchard, your host and publisher of Mac's List. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ben Forstang, Becky Thomas, and Jessica Black from the Mac's List team. This week, we're talking about what you need to know about job references. Many job seekers treat references as an afterthought. That's a big mistake, says Daisy Wright, this week's guest expert. She says research shows that 80% of employers check references. So you need to invest time with your references before you give their names to a hiring manager. Daisy and I talk later in the show. Are you afraid to ask others to help you in your job search? Ben has found an article from the Stanford Business School, and it says that most of us think others will say no when we ask for help. In fact, the opposite is true. Ben tells us more in a moment. You want to move to a new city in your home state, but you get no response to your applications. What can you do to change this? That's our question of the week. Becky shares her answer shortly. As always, let's first check in with the Mac's List team. And let's turn to Ben, who is out there every week poking around the internet looking for books, tools, and websites you can use in your job search and your career. So, Ben, what have you uncovered for listeners this week?
So this week, since we're talking about references, which is all about other people helping you out by speaking on your behalf, I thought I'd share this really interesting article that I found. It's called If You Want Something, Ask for It. Now, before I start, Mac, do you know what my favorite resource, like my favorite online journal I use to mine for these resources is?
Well, I thought it was the Harvard Business Review.
It
but
was.
I think you're about to change sides.
Yes, and I'm betraying your alma mater by going for, I don't know, a different business school. This is the Stanford Business Review.
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah. It's that school over there. So this article comes from the Stanford Graduate Business School, and it reaffirms a truism that I think we all know, but that we sometimes are afraid to accept, which is if you want something, you should ask for it. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast in the past, that you need help from others if you really want to maximize your job search. You got to get out there. You got to talk to people. You have to ask for really targeted assistance. And this is how you find out about the opportunities that never get advertised on job boards or anywhere else. But we also know that it can be really difficult to do this. Asking for help or really asking for anything can feel awkward. Especially when you're talking about a job search where a lot of people who are job seekers feel like they have nothing to offer back to people. And so it feels they're at the beggar's table asking someone for something and making an imposition on them. But here's the good news. Asking actually works. And our fears about imposing on others or that the other person will say no are vastly overblown in our head. And this article really discusses a series of studies that reveal that people tend to grossly underestimate how much others are likely to agree to help a request for assistance. It's really interesting stuff. They talk about one study where they sent out a bunch of people on campus. I assume this was Stanford's campus. And they walked up to complete strangers and asked, like, hey, can I borrow your cell phone? Right? I need to make a call to my mom or I'm lost or call a friend. And before they had the people do this, they asked, like, what percentage of people do you think are going to say yes to this request? And I think it was something like 18%. People said, oh, yeah, 18% of people are going to say yes to it. It ended up being close to like 80% of people when asked for help, gave the help to the people. It was really cool stuff. They have a bunch of other surveys that are reaffirming this point, which is like that voice in our head that says like, no, people won't help me. We exaggerate that and people are really very much more often willing to help.
So how does this affect job seekers, Ben? What lessons are you drawing from this?
Good question, Mac. In a couple of ways. So first, as I mentioned earlier, I think these findings should allay some of the fears people have about networking and asking others for help in their job search. When I tell people that they need to get out there and network or do informational interviews, so many people tell me something like, you know, why would anyone be willing to meet me? I've got nothing to offer. But the truth is professionals are much more willing to than you'd imagine to help out job seekers. So you've got to have the right approach, of course, but you'd be surprised by how much people will do for you if you just ask the right question and be direct about it. The second point here is I think you can take this principle and apply it to other aspects of your work lives, whether we're talking about asking for more money or seeking help from your boss or a coworker or anything else. So many times we build up these narratives in our head about, you know, I can't ask for it because they're going to say no or I'll be embarrassed. But the truth of the matter is, you know, if you do ask, good things happen from that. It's not a guarantee, but asking gets results.
Yeah, you'll never get no unless you ask the question, will you?
That's right.
Right. This is a lesson I keep learning myself personally. Just the other day, I sent off a request for a meeting with a sales prospect for Pritchard Communications, my other firm, and I thought, oh, I probably won't hear from that person for a week or more. And within an hour, not only did they respond, but they sent a Google invite scheduling the meeting. So you just have to ask.
Yeah, I mean, the other way to think about this is you're always going to get no if you don't ask, right? Like
exactly.
No is the default.
Right.
So if you ask, like you're automatically improving your chances. The other study that they came out here that I thought was really interesting was that direct asks for assistance were almost always better received than indirect. So if you were like being real coy and like not directly saying what you wanted, people were less likely to help you than if you just were very clear and said, like, I need this help. Will you help me? And the response rates on that direct ask were astronomical.
Absolutely. I think it goes back to what we always say here. People want to help. So reach out to your networks and make it easy for them to help you. So being direct is always good. And then knowing what you're asking for and not being shy. So go for it.
Hey, guys, I need to borrow someone's cell phone.
Got it.
Here you go.
Okay.
Wait, we're recording. Well, great research and great advice, Jessica. Well, thank you, Ben. If you've got a suggestion for Ben, he would love to hear from you. And please write him, and we'd love to share your idea on the show. His address is ben@maxlist.org. Now let's turn to you, our listeners, and Becky is here to answer one of your questions. So, Becky, what's in the mailbag this week?
Well, Mac, this week's question came in via email from a listener located in Bend, Oregon, and they asked to remain anonymous, so I'll just read their email. They wrote, "My question is on the topic of relocation. I would like to move to a place where pay is more in line with the cost of housing, so I've applied for a lot of jobs in different areas in Oregon, focusing on the Willamette Valley. I've had no response in about a year, yet I applied for a job 4,000 miles away and at least got a phone interview. What does it take?" Good question. I think that a lot of folks who are looking to move to a new place are like, oh, I'm moving to a new state, I'm moving across the country, something like that, where they feel like it's such a long distance and that's why they're having trouble getting those leads and getting those sort of interviews and things moving forward in their job search. But this person is like, well, I'm only a few hours away from the place I want to live. Why is this not working? You know, that's not as much of a barrier as far as like the distance between where you're living and where you want to move. So I think that it's a good question. It's a little bit tricky, but I think that there's a big opportunity with living sort of close to where you want to move. So I think the first thing that I would advise this person to do is really do some studying about the job market in the areas and the cities that you're targeting. You might imagine that you know what things are like in the Willamette Valley because you're only a few hours away from there right now. But just really dig in and do some study and research about the job market. specifically figure out, like, are your skills, expertise, and particular job title in demand in those areas? And also, are there, like, major industries and employers, organizations that are located in those areas that you want to live? Are those, like, find out what's interesting to you and what you may be qualified to do, and learn everything you can about those employers and those industries. Once you've done that, you have a huge opportunity in living close to the place that you want to move. So take advantage of it. Since you've done all this research about, you know, these organizations that you want to target, start reaching out to those folks. Start reaching out to professional organizations. When you're reaching out, ask to meet. Ask for an informational interview. Find out if there are networking events going on in those areas that you want to move. And take some time off from your day job. Drive over to the areas that you want to live and spend a couple of weekdays. You know, if it is the Willamette Valley, go over there and do some face-to-face networking, have some meetings, and build some face-to-face, like, personal connections. Once you start doing that, you're going to find opportunities opening up a lot easier, and this will really build on itself if you keep working at it. So I think that the approach of just sending applications is not really doing you any good, that you're so close to that area that you want to move. So use that proximity, physical proximity, to your advantage and really get over there and start, you know, making yourself known in that area. So that's my advice. Do you guys have any other thoughts on that?
That was excellent. I don't have anything else to add. I think that the focus on those in-person connections, it's sort of the same as if we were going to give advice to someone who was looking to move, to relocate from across the country. Mm-hmm. We would give them that same advice, building those connections, whether it is LinkedIn or if they are 4,000 miles away.
Right.
But, you know, reaching out to the organizations that they want to work for, or that they feel that they have a good opportunity to be connected with, and start making those actual in-person and online and all of those connections with people in the industries already in the location. I think that's spot on.
Yeah.
I second Jessica's endorsement. I think you've really hit the nail on the head here, Becky, with your advice about taking advantage of that asset you have with physical proximity. It's a huge advantage, and I hope she does tap into that.
Yeah. Great.
Well, thank you, Becky, and thank you to our listener in Bend, Oregon. And I think we are able to send her a book as well. We have a postal address.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So we'll send a book over.
Okay. Terrific. And again, if you've got a question for Becky, email her. Her address is becky@maxlist.org. You can also call our listener line. That number is area code 716-JOB-TALK, or post a question on our Facebook page. And if we use your question on the show, we'll send you a copy of Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. And when we return, I'll talk with this week's guest expert, Daisy Wright, about what you need to know about job references. Have you ever been asked a question like this in a job interview? Tell me about a time when you didn't agree with your boss. That's a tough one, right? What would you say? This is what hiring managers call a behavioral interview question, and it's a common tactic. Employers use this kind of question to explore your fit for a job based on your past experience. It can also be an easy question to answer if you have the right strategy. I share my own tips for how to answer these gotcha questions in my new guide, 100 Behavioral Interview Questions. This free resource teaches you a simple four-step process for expertly answering the most common behavioral questions. To get your copy, visit maxlist.org/questions. Again, go to maxlist.org/questions. Now let's continue with our show. Now let's turn to this week's guest expert, Daisy Wright. Daisy Wright is Chief Encouragement Officer at The Right Career Solution. She's also a certified career management coach and a professional resume writer. She works with executives, managers, and mid-career professionals to help them get hired faster. And Daisy's the author of two books, No Canadian Experience A, A Career Success Guide for New Immigrants, and Tell Stories, Get Hired, Innovative Strategies to Land Your Next Job and Advance Your Career. She joins us today from Brampton in Ontario, Canada. Daisy, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And our topic this week is references. And Daisy, you and I were chatting the other week, and you were telling me that many people, when they're a finalist for a job and there's an offer on the table, they treat references sometimes as an afterthought. Why is that a mistake?
It's a mistake because, one, they might have a good resume, gave them the interview, and they then leave that interview and start to realize that, wow, it's time for me to call my references. And what happens in such a case is that they do not give the reference advance notice. Sometimes they may have worked with the person for years and the person, does not readily remember who he or she is. Or sometimes you want to give your references an idea of what the new job entails so that they can steer the conversation towards that particular job to talk about your skills and your experience based on what the job is asking for. So the mistake they make actually is not to give their references advance notice.
So you really need to put time into preparation with your references just as you might in preparing a cover letter or getting ready for an interview, don't you?
Absolutely. In fact, I would even go ahead and say that they should be preparing the references even before they start sending out a cover letter and a resume. Because at the end of the day, the references will help to determine whether or not they get that job.
So let's step back and think about those references. And mm-hmm. Let's talk for a moment, Daisy, about the strategy people should follow when they're thinking about references. Who do you recommend people choose?
It's good. It's always good to choose people who they've worked with directly. So it's their boss, their supervisor, or, someone in a leadership role. And people who are able to attest to their accomplishments and their capabilities. One of the things I advise my clients is to avoid people who they are not sure will speak well on their behalf. And I had a particular client who ended up with a reference like that. The person told him that she was going to, speak well on his behalf, and it ended up being that she did not. And the reason was she did not want him to leave the company. So he had faith in her saying, I will speak well on your behalf, but then she went behind his back and didn't do that. So you have to make sure that you know that the person will speak well on your behalf. The fact that he or she might have been your supervisor does not necessarily mean that will carry over into being a good reference.
Well, how do you recommend people do that once they're considering asking someone to serve as a reference? They're uncertain maybe about the quality of the reference. What's the best way to mm-hmm. approach a person if you have that kind of doubt in your mind?
Okay, so the first thing I would say is to select a minimum of three people that you'd want to act as references for you. Meet with them. Have coffee or have a telephone conversation with them to give them an idea of where you're at now. As I said earlier, they may have worked with them for, a few years prior. So give them an idea of where you are now and what your career goal is. Give them an update on what new skills you have acquired. Provide them with a copy of your resume. And of course, give them a copy of the job posting as well.
And when you, are there people that you shouldn't ask to be references, Daisy? I mean, obviously we've talked about someone you might have some concerns about, but you sit down, you have this conversation, you clear that matter up. But mm-hmm. are there people who should never be on your reference list?
Well, one of the things they have said that people should not have on their references would be relatives or close friends. And that goes without saying. It's because, you know, they will say the best thing about you, even if they know that you have some hang-ups. So that's one. Two, again, it's people who you may have had conflicts with in the organization. That person might not be a good reference for you to use. And yes, I think those would probably be the people you wouldn't want to ask to act as a reference for you.
Okay. Well, I want to talk in a moment about how to deal with bad references, because sometimes we're in a position, it doesn't work out, and we know that if an employer calls that the manager that we work for, they may hear some unflattering things. But before we take that up, how do you recommend people work with their references during a search? Now, you, for example, suggested sharing a job posting with for positions you've applied for with your references. When does it make sense, Daisy, depending on jobs, to have different numbers of references, or should you always work with the same three people?
Well, if you have three people, if you only have three people, then I guess you can at least start with them. If you do have more people and you feel really confident that all those people can, you know, speak well on your behalf, then, you know, that's great. Probably depending on the industry. So if it's finance, for example, and you have one particular reference who works in finance, then it makes sense to use that particular individual. I am not sure if there's really a limit on how many people you should have, but my suggestion is to have at least three individuals who can really, really attest to your capabilities.
How do you recommend people stay in touch with their references? Because a typical search, depending on where you are in your career and the kinds of positions you're pursuing, could take 3, 6, even 12 months.
Well, you should constantly be building and maintaining your relationships with people in your network. Some candidates or some people they may have a reference or they may have someone in their network, but they only go to that individual when they're looking for something. And that's not good. You have to nurture the relationship so that whenever you are in a position to, when you need to ask for a reference, then it's easy for them. You're on their radar and it's easy for them to remember who you are. And that's one of the mistakes. And I should have said that earlier. That's one of the mistakes that job seekers make. They forget who their references are. They forget the people who are very important in their network until they are in need. And I think it was Harvey McKay who said you should something to do with keep in touch with people before the well runs dry, pretty much.
Yeah, I think maintaining those ties, not only when you're doing a search, but between searches is just vital.
Now, it's very important because people don't like to feel used. And if you're only contacting them when you are in need of assistance, then that doesn't look good on you personally or professionally.
Yeah, excellent point. Now, let's talk about what happens when you've done all the steps that you've outlined, Daisy. You've stayed in touch with your references. You've applied for a position. You've gotten in touch with people and let them know what the job is and that they could get a call. When you know that call is going to come, what do you recommend candidates do?
Could you repeat that? When you know the call is going to come to who? To the candidate or to the referee?
To the when you know an employer is going to contact the referee and you've met with the hiring manager and the hiring manager says, please share your references. You turn over the list of three or more names. And the manager tells you, she's going to start making phone calls that day. What should the candidate do next?
Well, I would imagine that the candidate would have advised those references that they're going for the interview and they should be expecting the call. They would have shared the job posting with them as well as the resume. They would have helped them to have to guide them on what are some of the potential questions they might be asked. Or they may say after the interview, you know what, they were focusing a lot on my ability to lead a team. Could you speak to that particular competence, my leadership skills? So it's just a matter of, you know, for giving the referee enough time, enough warning that I'm in an active job search. You know, some people might be calling you, and please be aware that people will be calling you, and here is a copy of my resume, and here are some topics that I would want you to address, just to make sure that, you know, everyone is on the same page.
And is it appropriate for job candidates to check back with the referees to see if they indeed got a call from the manager and what the manager and the referee might have talked about?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's always good to check back with the person to find out what was said. Were there questions that they were not sure how to answer? Oh, definitely. Because then that will give the candidate an idea of, you know, whether or not they're going to be called back.
So let's talk about negative references, Daisy. Mm-hmm. You're a candidate for a job. You had a mixed experience at a previous position. You know the hiring manager is going to call that past employer and may hear some negative things about you. How do you recommend candidates handle that?
So what I would do is, because some employers insist that the candidate give them a name of their direct report. And sometimes that's not always possible because, you know, there have been conflicts and things like that. So two ways they can handle that particular question. First, they can say, you know, I'm not sure what Mary is going to say. We had an issue at one point, but I realized I was in the wrong, and I apologize, and I ended up, you know, growing out of that experience. So, he could say something to the effect that, I'm not sure what George at the widget company would say about me at this point. He was not happy when I resigned. And after 3 years in the department, I was bypassed for a promotion, and I asked to train the new hire. I decided it was time to explore other opportunities, and so I left the position for ABC company. So that position represented not only a hike in salary, but the responsibilities were exactly what I was looking for. So as you can see, I excelled in that role and was promoted within 12 months of joining the company. So what you would actually be saying is, yes, the relationship kind of soured at some point, but I was very professional in terms of voicing my displeasure, but I did not hesitate to train the new hire. And after that, I decided to explore new opportunities elsewhere.
So acknowledge there was an issue, talk about what happened next and what you went on to do, and touch on the accomplishments that you got done at that later opportunity.
Right. Because it's important to be authentic and transparent, you know, and discuss the situation as candidly as possible. The only piece I would add is that regardless of what happened, never badmouth the company nor the former boss or the former supervisor.
I've heard so many employers make that same point that you're making, Daisy, that they're turned off when they hear a candidate for a job say something negative about a past employer.
Exactly, because they're thinking, if you're saying that to us now and we hire you when you're leaving, then you might be saying, you might say the same thing about us. Plus, it does, it just doesn't come off as being professional.
Yeah, and I know
it's
that
like can, a sour grapes issue.
Absolutely, and I know it can be difficult sometimes because sometimes people often are mistreated in the workplace and they've suffered. But it's, as you say, the best policy is just to keep it to yourself.
Yes.
Well, terrific. Now, Daisy, tell us what's coming up next for you.
I will be writing the third edition of No Canadian Experience. It's a very popular book. And because we have lots of newcomers to Canada who are benefiting from that, from the book. So that will be my next project for 2018, to come up with the third edition.
Well, congratulations. We'll be sure to include links to that book and your other book as well. And I know people can learn more about you and your practice by visiting therightcareer.com. And we'll include that URL in the show notes as well. Daisy, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate it. And best of luck. All the best for 2018.
Great. Thank you, Daisy. We're back in the Maxlist studio. What were some key takeaways from my conversation with Daisy? What stood out for you all?
Well, one thing that stood out for me is not something that I personally took for a piece of advice, but I think that is really important to take away for people is to continue the relationships with your network. Always, consistently, and constantly, so that you're not in a scramble mode when you do need to have those refresher conversations, but it is a strong relationship all the time, so that you're just ready, that you can reach out to someone that is your reference at any time, and they'll know exactly what's been going on with you, and they'll know your accomplishments, and they'll know that you do have that strong relationship and that you're not just using them for a positive reference.
Yeah, I think that relationship building is vital, and I don't think your referee is not going to be able to serve you as well if the first they know that they're being asked for an opinion is to get a call from an employer.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's like not acceptable, right? Like,
yeah.
If I was someone's reference and I got a call out of the blue and nobody told me about it, I would be like, oh, I did not know this call was coming. You know, like you're putting your person who's supposed to be like one of the best people who can talk about your work in like a really uncomfortable position. So yeah.
Yeah.
That whole like prep your references, like talk to them about the job that you're interviewing for and, you know, some of the things that you're telling that employer so that they can sort of reiterate and support what you're saying.
Absolutely.
It's going to be so great. You know?
Yeah. Huge. But also, not having that call come out of the blue to your reference as well, so that even if you are prepping your reference, which is important to what you're saying, but that it's not just a, hey, I haven't talked to you in 5 years, but I have this interview next week, or like, hey, heads up, you might be getting a call. It's having those consistent check-ins every once in a while so that you're not, so that it is a strong relationship and it's not just like, oh, you know, I know that you'll give me this really positive reference because we worked together 11 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. Yep, agreed.
We talk a lot about customizing your resume around the job, like the specific things that the employer is looking for. And I think speaking to Becky and Jessica's point, like you also kind of want to customize your references around what the employer is looking for as well.
Definitely.
And so part of that, like prepping your references isn't just saying like, hey, this is, you know, a call might be coming soon, but saying like they were particularly interested in, you know, that project we did 2 years ago. And like, maybe you could talk a little bit more about what I did there. I know I've done this in the past, like when I knew that reference calls were being made, like telling my references like, oh, this seemed to be a particular need that they have over there. So like anything you could talk about my role as a manager, I'd appreciate. And you can't obviously control what the reference is going to say on the phone, but you can do your best to kind of tell them what you think the priority areas are. And the more you can articulate it, the you know, the more prep work you've done, I think the better position you're in.
Yeah, that's great advice.
We didn't talk about this, Daisy and I, but one thing I've seen some referees do when I've called people for references is they not only tell you about their experience with a candidate, but they ask you about your concerns about the candidate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and they do that because it gives them an opportunity, just as can happen when you're a job candidate in an interview asking about an employer's concerns, to talk about experiences that might not otherwise come up without knowing what those concerns might be that an employer has about that particular candidate.
That's good to know.
It is. And the other thing that happens is if a candidate checks back with that referee,
right,
they get insights into what the employer's concerns are about their prospects.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. Yeah, that's great.
I think one thing to point out here is it's also a little bit of like the Wild West in terms of what employers do with references, because I've had employers call me up and say, can you chat for 5 or 10 minutes about this person? I've also had employers like send me an automated like evaluation form that have, sometimes it's like rate this person 1 to 10, and sometimes it's like weird questions like, you know, would you use this person as on a expedition to the Himalayas? I'm not even joking. That was a question once. The answer was no, they're not a Sherpa. Why would I? but like, so it's, I think all you can do is kind of prep for the norm, which I think is still the phone call, I think. But know that like those things are changing.
Well, we did have a guest earlier in the show, I think, maybe episode in the 20s or 30s, Ray Bixler, who talked about automated reference checks. And there, it is a practice for many large employers who have big volumes of applications to go through. But I agree, Ben, I think the norm for most employers, particularly small organizations, are telephone calls.
Do you think that it is pretty standard for every employer to call the references that they're given? Because I don't know how it is now, but I know several years ago it was sort of hit or miss whether or not people were going to actually call references.
In preparing for this, I found some research that, and I think Daisy shared it as well on her blog, that about 80% of employers do check references.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's valuable information and people should. I know I've had experiences, again, years ago where I provided references and I prepped my references that they were going to get a call and they never got calls. So I don't know if that was just sort of antiquated and people are more on the ball now and it's more standard, or I just didn't know if you had any feedback or information about that.
I mean, 80% seems like a big number, but mm-hmm. like I'm actually surprised it's not 100%. I would think that this is just something that everyone would do.
I think it should be standard.
Yeah, but I guess at least 20% of employers don't. Yeah.
It's interesting.
I think it does happen. Well, thanks everybody for that feedback. And thank you, Daisy, for joining us as a guest this week. And thank you, our listeners, for downloading today's episode of Find Your Dream Job. Now, don't let yourself get surprised by a tough behavioral interview question the next time you talk to an employer. Get your copy today of 100 Behavioral Interview Questions You Need to Know. Go to maxlist.org/questions. Again, that URL is maxlist.org/questions. And join us next week for another episode of Find Your Dream Job. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.